In January of 2022, Bruce Eric Kaplan found himself confused and upset by the state of the world and the state of his life as a television writer in Los Angeles. He started a journal to keep from going mad, which eventually became the new book, They Went Another Way, a Hollywood memoir. The book's through line traces his attempt to get a television project set up in the increasingly Byzantine world of Hollywood. Bruce Eric Kaplan is a television writer, producer, and a cartoonist for The New Yorker. Again, the new book is They Went Another Way, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Bruce Eric Kaplan to the roundtable this morning. Bruce, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm excited.
So what brought you to want to tell this story and a memoir of a very specific time?
Well, I didn't want to tell the story. I really didn't. This book picked me. I just sat down one day and started writing it, January 8th or whatever the day was. It's a journal. It's a memoir in the form of a journal. So I just, as you know, from the beginning, I started the journal to keep from going mad about my work life and the world in general. And what I wanted to do, what the book wanted me to do, because it really was, the book wanted this. I never dreamed of writing this kind of book. The book wanted me to do a document of what it was like to be a person in 2022, and that person was me. So it involves my work life, where I'm struggling. It involves my home life. It involves driving my son to school, go shopping, making something for dinner. It involves thinking about the world. It involves, I mean, it was a time that it's the first 6 months of 2022. And, you know, there was this Uvalde, if that's how you say it. I only read things. I don't watch TV. But the shooting in Texas, the school shooting, it's Roe v. Wade getting taken away. It's like, it's everything. The book is everything. The main through line of the book is I'm trying to sell a project, a half hour comedy starring Glenn Close.
And this is what would be your passion project, something that would fully envelop you and would be a good match for your talents.
Yeah, it was a script I wrote that was very meaningful to me. I'd always wanted to do a project that was sort of like Harold and Maude. And I've also always wanted to do a project that was like Moonstruck, an ensemble about love. And this is sort of what's a combination of that. It was about an older woman who falls in love with a young man and the reverberations in her family about that love.
So once you wrote it, were you thinking Glenn Close from the very beginning?
Close to the beginning.
Yeah,
definitely was, actually. It was, she was the dream, sure.
So your agent sent it to her reps, and then you find out that she's read it and she wants to do it. So as I think most people know about Hollywood, so you would think that would be a good way to start, but then things get difficult.
Right. It's ups and downs of meetings and streaming platforms, and Pete Davidson ends up becoming he signs on to the project, which caused some complications. And I don't want to give away the end of the book, but right. There was ups and a lot of ups and downs.
Did you want to be the showrunner as well?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, run it.
Yeah, and I'm always, if I write a pilot, I'm the showrunner.
Right. So give us an idea of the chronology of how long. I mean, obviously, as you say, this is a journal and it tells us the story. But from the idea of starting it to saying, OK, this definitely isn't going to happen, roughly how long goes by?
Well, to be really explicit, I wrote this project in 2018, I believe. And when I was on a deal at Sony, and it never went out into the world because we couldn't get any actresses to read it, basically, I believe. And then my deal was up and they gave up on it. Then I signed with new agents in 2021. They had read the script and they said, I think we can get talent to attach to this. Then I met with Glenn in, I had a Zoom with Glenn in, say, August or September of 2021. And she wanted to do it, but then it took until December for Sony to work out the deal about them being a silent partner in the project, because they owned it and they needed to now be a silent partner, whatever that means. A lawyer will be able to tell you what that means. So then we started looking for a director in December, got a director in January, then started having meetings with him, then started scheduling meetings, then was pitching the project up until May. Then there were some offers on the project. Then there's negotiations going into June. And so that's basically the timeline of the project.
So let's just look at a random day in February where you're having a meeting. Do you think, as you're doing this, of February into March or whenever, you take whatever period you want to, as you're having these meetings, that there is some hope that the project, a thought that this is something that is going forward and that is going to happen, and not thinking that at any moment it could all implode?
You're saying, do I think it's going to go forward? Never.
Right.
At any moment, everything falls apart in my career.
So then how do you, and I guess that's what I wanted to get to. So then how do you approach those meetings where you are confident, you are sure, you are talking about exactly what you want, and then also, keep in the back of your mind that this may all implode?
I mean, for me, I used to not be as grounded as I am in this moment. I know it took me about 100 years to get here, but it's really the only thing that's real is the meeting. The only thing that's real in this moment is you and I talking to each other. I don't know what's going to happen after this conversation. So it's
Right.
like I'm trying to just be myself, be 100% connect with you the same way I would try and connect with anyone in a meeting. And that's actually the only thing. I mean, that's what the lesson of the book is. In the book, I'm freaking out a lot of the time. And because I'm not in my highest self and I'm thinking, oh my God, I need to get this. This has to happen. If this, I have to make this happen. What if it doesn't happen? And that's the me in the book. But the me in my right mind is sort of like things happen as they're meant to happen. One thing leads to another. So you just show up. Just show up. Like I'm showing up. I hope you feel I'm showing up for you.
Absolutely.
That's all there is to do in life. Just show up. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but just show up to whatever you're doing in this moment. Like, be present.
So when you are in contact with Glenn Close, and then Glenn Close says, "Oh, my friend Pete Davidson would probably be good for this." I don't want to stereotype anybody, but that's an interesting friendship, right?
They have an unusual, they have, I mean, yes, it was a surprising friendship. I think if I'm not 100%, but I think they met during a Zoom during the pandemic about mental health.
And then he reads just a few pages of it and says, "Okay, I'm in." And then you're trying to get this Zoom meeting going, and he keeps on repeatedly calling in sick. But meanwhile, you know that he's all over the world with Kim Kardashian. And how frustrating is that when you're trying to get all the ducks in a row?
Again, it's a layered reaction to that. On one level, it's frustrating, but on the other level, of course, he's hard to pin down, and of course, he's all over the world with Kim Kardashian. It's like that's what life is. You know what I mean? Like
Right.
it's the magic of life, actually. It's like again, when I'm in my highest self, it's amazing that he doesn't show up and is all around the world with Kim Kardashian because it's like that's what life is. Life is everything, and that's part of it.
So why then do you believe you were freaking out at the time?
As I said, it's like I'm freaking out because I think, oh my God, this has to happen. If this doesn't happen, this is my last boat out. It's like I have to make it happen or I'm never going to have another job. Like that type of thinking. When I'm in my lowest self, I would say.
And how do you now prevent Bruce Eric Kaplan from becoming his lowest self?
I'm praying for you to give me the answer to that one. Because I don't know.
But, well, okay, well, all right, let's go this way. Do you know what the opposite feels like?
Yes, absolutely. The
Yeah.
opposite is like this moment. It's what we just said. It's like this moment is what's real. Nothing, the future isn't what's real. This moment is what's real. I just want to enjoy my conversation with you. So it's like I just want to enjoy my day when I'm waiting for someone, you know, to not show up for a meeting or not. Like I just want to enjoy this experience. I want to enjoy this ride. I don't want to like say like, how is this ride gonna end? Let me just be on the ride.
Bruce Eric Kaplan is the author of They Went Another Way, a Hollywood memoir. Give us an idea of what you were looking for in a show that was different than your past experiences and working on other shows that were very successful, that went very, very well.
Forgive me, but I think I'm not understanding the question. The question is, what am I looking for that's different than the other shows I've worked on?
Right. So you were talking about this is sort of like the dream project. And my question is, so what were you trying to build or even to replicate that was either missing or you were trying to replicate from your previous work?
Well, I've spent decades trying to get my own show that I've created on the air. And that's the difference. I mean, I'm working on a show right now and I'm having the time of my life, but it's not a show that I created. Does that answer the question? Like I've had amazing experiences. I've been very fortunate in my work life because I've had great jobs. You know, the thing that's been a struggle for me is trying to get my own show that I created on the air.
Okay. You are looking for that of sort of a if you will, a cradle to grave experience where the project begins with you and ends with you.
Yes, where it's a personal expression of me, which is not to say I put myself into the shows that I work on that are created by other people, but it's their baby. I'm just taking care of their baby. And I wanted to have my own baby. Does that answer it?
Yeah, absolutely. So what is it that you believe makes it so difficult for that to be achieved?
I don't know. If I had the answer, I'd have a show on the air that I created.
Meaning that and I think I speak for many television viewers and maybe I hope I speak for you too. There's a lot of crap on the air. There's a lot of stuff that you wonder, oh, how did that go forward? While there are other things that may have been just fantastic, do not see the light of day.
Oh, completely. I mean, let's take me out of the equation. I've been reading pilot scripts, you know, since my 20s. So for decades upon decades, and I've often read like, oh my God, this is the greatest pilot you know, not the greatest pilot, but this is the most beautiful pilot for a TV show. And then it doesn't get made. So I don't know. I don't, it doesn't, the way something gets on the air, it seems disconnected from the quality of the script.
So the project you're working on now, from my understanding, is Nobody Wants This, right?
Yeah, it's the greatest job, and I love the show. Yeah.
So you're showrunner for season two. You were not for season one.
No. I got hired. They knew, I guess Netflix does whatever they do. The Netflix process was they knew they wanted to do a second. They knew they most likely wanted to do a second season before the first one had aired or re been dropped or released or whatever the words are. I'm in this business. And I still don't know that end of the business, what the right words are. But so I started working on the show about a month or so before I started working on the second season a month before the first one came out, I'd say.
It's expected to be a hit, and then it becomes a hit. Kristen Bell, Adam Brody, and it's a lovely show. It's just a very, very funny, lovely show that is, I think, just to be very positive and reassuring when you're watching it. And I would think that would be fun to work on.
I'm having, yes, an incredible amount of fun, and I just can't express enough how much the creator, Aaron Foster, is a wonderful person and writer. And I mean, I think this show is magical. I think it's like, I like, it's sort of similar to what I wanted to do with my Glenn project, that I feel like it's about love. It's about love is the answer. And it's about, to me, it's a very spiritual thing to make this show and to send it out into the world.
What was it that presented itself for you to be the showrunner in the second season?
Yeah, they'd had a complicated situation. That this thing is a miracle. They had a very complicated production for the first season with various people show running it, and you know there were complications, and but it triumphed, you know. But they needed, I think, for the second season to have a little bit of a smoother process, and so that's why Jenny Connor, who I know from Girls, and I were brought in.
Talk about that partnership between you and Jenny Connor, of what that is like to have somebody that you work with when you're working on a show. You worked with each other on Girls. You're working with each other on this project, of how important a relationship like that is.
It's, I mean, every show is different. Sometimes it's just one person being the showrunner. This is more like we concentrate on different areas, like you know, sort of production or script, and it's a collaboration. You know, we worked together for 6 years on Girls, where Jenny was the showrunner with Lena Dunham, and I can't speak for Jenny, but perhaps that model sort of made her understand that it's not, it can be a great thing to not just be the solo showrunner, where you can
Yeah.
kind of like, okay, you do this and I'll do this.
Bruce, where do TV shows go to die? In other words,
You, I can't wait. I love the question. Not that I understand it, but keep going.
So, for example, like the Glenn Close project, when it's done, I mean, you still have it written, right? So where does that go? Do you ever think, oh, well, maybe someday we can do this, or are there
Yeah, I'm
hands attached
crazy.
to it, or
You never know. I still think maybe Glenn and Pete will do it. That's how crazy I am. Like, no, nothing. I mean, everything dies. Most things do die. But my friend Rob, who's a TV writer, he's had tons of projects that die, then get resuscitated, then die again. You know, most things, though, it's like I would say the majority of projects do re actually die. And then they have an expiration date, and it's sort of like food almost in a way, where it's like, okay, that food was good, but now we don't want it anymore. Or maybe it's like people just like a shiny new toy or something like that. It's so it I understand the question, because it's like, oh, you have this script, you believe in this script, why doesn't it still exist, even if it sort of, you know, actors fall out or a network passes on it?
Right.
But I've had tons of projects where I really believed in them. The network passed on it. I mean, I'll be specific. I've had projects when I had a deal at HBO, and HBO passed on it, and my agent said, okay, we're going to take it out to other places, see if they'll make it, and then no one wants it. So I don't know what to say. I mean, it's sort of like, it's almost as, going back to what I said originally, it's almost like scripts are like food. They have a shelf life and then they die. I wish they were. You know, they're more like eggs than a can of beans, which can last for a longer time.
So at a time when you had, say, three broadcast networks and a cable network or two that were producing original television, and now with streaming services of Hulu or Netflix or HBO or Apple, .. is that good for you and your business, or does that complicate things for you and your business?
I'm going to give you my perspective. It's anecdotal. It's because
Yep.
it's basically on me and my writer friends. I mean, I think if you asked a producer or an agent, they may have a more informed opinion. For me, it feels like it's much harder in this moment, because Netflix aside, which understands like how to make money doing what it does, all these streamers seem to be like startup companies that are trying to make money but aren't officially making money. And there's so many of them, and everything has to be noisy, as they say, for them to attract eyeballs or viewers. So it's very different than when I started, when it was like, you if you would like on and let's say when I worked on Seinfeld. So it was Thursday night. There was Friends at 8 o'clock
Right.
and Seinfeld at 9 o'clock. I got
Right.
scared suddenly that I'm so old I was misremembering.
No.
But I'm not. That was what it was. And at that 8:30 spot, they just kept trying to put things. Oh, and ER was on at 10, so their 9:30 spot. So they would just keep trying things at 8:30 or 9:30. They didn't have to be the noisiest thing in the world. There was Veronica's Closet, or there was, Union Square, I think was one. There was just they would just try anything. It was very different than now. It's like, oh, someone has to get murdered in the first episode, so that they it people get hooked.
Right. And when you look at sort of the future of writing, is there anything about writing this book and about writing about the experience that gave you an insight to say, okay, this is how I would like to work on another dream project?
Gosh, I want to be hopeful here.
Yeah.
I feel
Well,
like we're
that's
ending soon, and I want to end on a hopeful note.
Yeah.
The hope. Let me try and be hopeful. Hold on, let me think of this because I don't know how to sell. But I don't know anything more about how to sell something of my own that's going to get on the air. But the hopefulness is, whatever happens, happens. I don't
Yeah.
need anything of. Literally, I don't need anything other than this conversation I'm having with you in this moment.
And obviously, and we haven't talked about this aspect of your career, but as a New Yorker cartoonist, what gap does that fill in? Like, what niche does that allow you? What itch does that allow you to scratch?
Oh my gosh, the cartoons are everything to me. They are, I've said this many times, but they're my journals.
Hmm.
I at the moment I started this journal, I started because I was taking a break from cartoons for a variety of reasons. So I was like, cartoons have been for almost my whole adult life, how I process what I think about, what happens to me, what I see in the world. So the cartoons are my lifeline because it's like I sit down and I draw and I connect with the deepest part of myself.
Bruce Eric Kaplan is the author of the new book, They Went Another Way, a Hollywood memoir. It is published by Holt. Bruce Eric Kaplan, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to speak to you.
Yeah, same.
Again, Bruce Eric Kaplan's new book is They Went Another Way, a Hollywood memoir. It is published by Holt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.